Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
The shadow, I wish it had been a musical. I don't know why I'm singing. I don't feel well. The shadow. Hello, that is the film we're doing this week. I am Richard on the podcast. This time is Abby.
Hello.
It's very delayed.
Yeah, I was worried I was going to sneeze, sorry.
Yeah, me and Abby have the cold, but people who don't have the cold yet or at the moment are Anthony
Good day.
and Jamie.
Hello.
And that makes up the core spoiler-filled film conversation group. Time to have a spoiler-filled film conversation, right, guys?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Hooray.
How many films have I apologized right at the start of the episode for?
Basically,
Too
all
many,
of your
Jamie.
picks. Yes, it was Jamie's pick. He picked The Shadow from 1990 something. So, Jamie,
Four.
can you four? Thank you. Can you give the details of who's in it, who done it, and all that, and we'll get to talking about it.
The Shadow was released in 1994. It was directed by Russell Mulcahy of Highlander fame. And Highlander 2 fame, and
No,
Resident Evil, whichever one he did.
Highlander 2 Infamy.
Yeah,
Yeah, go on.
written by Walter B. Gibson, who, well, he created the character, I think, of the Shadow from the old radio plays and pulp comics of the 30s. But script was written by David, is it Kep or Coep? I don't know how people pronounce it. Anyway, it stars Alec Baldwin, which is a weird thing to say these days. John Lone, Penelope Ann Miller, Peter Boyle, Ian McKellen, Tim Curry, Jonathan Winters. It's another one of those that guy movies. Also stars Max Wright, who most people would know as the dad from Alf.
Weird.
Who, you know, the 70-plus-year-old dad of a 7-year-old kid in Alf.
Don't judge. At least he's at
Does
it.
any
He's getting busy.
yeah
He's
well I we all remember what he was at back when that video came out in the, like, was it early 2000s or mid 2000s,
You lost me.
the dad from Alf, and the video that came out of him smoking crack and having sex with a homeless guy that him and his boyfriend had just, like, roped in for, like, a orgy.
I obviously am not knowledgeable enough about the world of Alf-based scandals. That's incredible.
Let me just take this down.
Just your cue to pause the podcast and now Google this news story. Smoking crack and having sex with a tramp. Why?
Anyway.
For fun, like.
Well, I mean, he really didn't like being on Alf.
He fucking loved being on crack and the homeless. Literally, he loved the homeless.
But yeah, despite his lifestyle, he's still alive, but I don't think he acts very much anymore.
They say tramps are good for you.
Anyway, yeah, it's got, oh, James Hong turns up in it as well. It's got a pretty good cast of sort of
All the Asians,
it does.
all
cult movie and
Americans.
B movie actors.
Yeah.
Anyway, summary, because you don't really need to know what the plot of this is, because there isn't a fucking plot.
That was a shame.
1930s New York City, the Shadow battles his nemesis, Shiwan Khan, the last descendant of Genghis Khan, who's building some kind of implosion device or some shit. I don't know, who
Big
cares?
shiny bomb in it.
Whatever. Alec Baldwin puts a fucking thing on his face, and his nose gets bigger.
And he disappears because of powers.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fuck hell.
Why did you pick this again?
Don't know. So,
Did Alec Baldwin come up to you in the street and go, "You will review positively the shadow"?
yes. I mean,
It didn't work because we're going to slack it off, basically.
I wanted to look at it because I remember the hype for this in the early 90s. Like, it was being advertised a lot when it came out, as if it was like the next fucking Batman. And I think The Shadow is one of the really early sort of pulp, not superheroes, but, like, before superheroes were really a thing, clearly was an inspiration for like Batman and a
comic
few others.
Books in general, yeah.
Yeah, it was a radio play. Orson Welles played him at some point.
Yeah.
On the radio, but like, yeah, I guess they decided to adapt it to sort of try and cash in on the Batman craze, and this was like just before Batman Forever, so you know Batman was still like hot shit.
It's commonplace now, yeah, though, to have a comic book from the past be made and try and give it a go.
That was part of why I wanted to look at it, because I've become sort of fascinated by, because comic book movies now are the fucking, they're the bread and butter of like Hollywood now.
Yeah, the blockbuster scene.
Yeah, like the whole Marvel universe thing is slowly, you know, taking over the cinema. Black Panther just had his own solo movie that broke box office records. I'm sure like back in like the 90s, no one would have expected Black Panther to even get his own movie. Yeah. And there are, you know, superhero movies planned for years to come at this point. They, like, they're just standard cinema now. But, like, when we were, like, kids in the 90s, that was unheard of. Like, you had the Batman films, but for, like, successful comic book films that were, like, accepted, that was it.
Like, they were rare. They were...
No, there was... No, Christopher Reeves as Superman, that was well-regarded as well.
That was the 70s,
but,
wasn't
like,
it?
That was even... I mean, that was back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And that was...
There wasn't three like, every year or more.
Yeah, and it wasn't... And Superman is, like... Or, for a long time, along with Batman, was, like, the most mainstream superhero you had.
Yeah.
But also, like, were there any Superman... There were no Superman films in the 90s.
There were the TV series, weren't there?
Yeah, the Adventures of Lois and Clark or whatever. But, like, yeah.
Lois and Clark.
It wasn't until... Oh, that's it. Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. Hello? The 90s was a sort of wasteland when it comes to superhero films outside of Batman, but there were a lot of attempts to make superhero comic book movies.
Yeah.
A lot of them ended up as, like, kind of cult films that people, like... didn't like, but it was the closest thing to having a character adapted. It wasn't until like
The Phantom or something. It's like, oh, that's not very good. Or The Rocketeer. Oh, that's shit, but I guess we have an affection for the cheesy schlockness of it now.
Yeah, that's terrible, but we don't have a choice, so or like
this week's pill film selection.
But it wasn't until like the end of the 90s when you had, really it was like the first two Blade films and the first X-Men film. And people went, oh, those are quite good. And they were based on comics. Yeah, and then you had Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, and then Christopher Nolan did Batman really seriously and, like, took it, like, no, these aren't superhero films, I'm making real films.
You're not about serious. It's got a silly clown in it. What are you talking about? Like, you know what? They're silly.
But, and then, like, whenever the first Iron Man came out, then you had like the Marvel Cinematic Universe started building up, and that was really like,
oh shit, we can do characters that people haven't heard of as much, and then we are where we are now.
And, like I said, now you've got Black Panther and Guardians of the Galaxy.
So Jamie, why did we do The Shadow?
because of all that, I've become fascinated with looking at all the failed attempts at superhero films in the 90s, and
this is the thing. If a scientist is experimenting and trying to get their formula to work, they don't go back and obsess with the wrong answers.
That's why I'm not a scientist. But
you also don't make giant ticking bombs, so...
Oh, God, yeah. But so this is one that I rented this when it came out. So it must have been 94, so I was 9 years old, so I was pretty...
Stupid.
I think it was established before I was a stupid kid.
Yeah.
But I honestly did not remember anything other than Alec Baldwin's nose and a little bit about that living knife, the pervert.
Oh my God.
Yes. But, so I thought, I'd go back and... I knew it was bad. Like, I knew just from its reputation it was bad, but I wanted to see, like, if it was, like, that kind of weird bad that a lot of superhero films were, especially in the early 90s.
Hmm.
And then bits of it are, but for the most part, it's just really fucking boring.
Okay, well, that's fair. We'll get into why it's boring or whether it isn't or not. Anthony, you had seen this several times in the past as well, am I right?
Several times?
Yeah, it's Jamie pretty much just told my own story there. Like, I also kind of rented it as a kid at the time, quite a few times. I think it's what Jamie was saying. It's like, this is the only kind of comic book superhero thing that we had, and it's the only thing I could have, like, latched onto. But again, the resounding memories of the film were Alec Baldwin's big nose and the weird living knife. And also Ian McKellen for me. But I think that was from a subsequent viewing, like on TV later on, when I became aware of who Ian McKellen was. I remembered the style of it, it being a kind of like film noir kind of set in the 20s or 30s or whenever it's set.
It's 30s, yeah.
Mm. And I remember liking it enough as a kid, but again, how many times have we brought something here from our childhoods thinking that it's fine, and it's not so many times. So I don't know what I was expecting this time.
The problem I had with it, not to like jump too far ahead, is that it's bad, but it's also fine, whatever. Like, it's not, I wanted it to be worse. Because I think they needed something from it.
I think I'm probably landing slightly on the other side of the fence from you guys. Like, I think there was enough in here for me to appreciate that I didn't come out at the end feeling like I wasted my time. Certainly, like, it's a weird one for me, because generally I'm a substance over style guy, but for some reason this film, like, has switched me. Just my brain has switched, and the whole visual style and direction of the film are enough for me to like it, even though really none of the film makes any sense.
That's the idea of the style of the film is something that I want to get into once we've done the expectations. So I will. Mm. Destroy your opinion on that one.
I got some qualms with that as well. Like, Abby, had you heard of or seen this before?
I'd seen it before. In my head, I'd filed it into the same group as Dick Tracy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Shit.
But
yeah. Ugly shit.
Go on. Sorry.
No, well, and I had the same thing with this as I did with that, where I remembered the visual style and not much of anything else. Yeah. So I remembered a lot of the, like, I remember what he looked like. I remembered what some of the key scenes looked like, but I couldn't have told you what happened.
Endless Highlander quickening style window smashes. No?
There was a period in the 90s where that was just happening constantly everywhere.
Stone Cold, yeah, Russell Mulcahy seems to like it a lot, though.
Are you blaming him? Fair enough.
Oh, yes, I blame him utterly.
Yeah. I don't know, Steve Austin's got a lot to answer for. Okay, so it's a lot of vague memories from you guys. I'll tell you this much, I had never heard of it, I'd never heard of The Shadow. I may have, like, seen The Shadow referenced in, like, a Batman cartoon or something.
Darkwing Duck.
I heard of him.
He's basically The Shadow.
Yeah, but Darkwing Duck fights, like, robotic...
Darkwing Duck is, like, a mix of 60s Batman and The Shadow.
Yeah, so, okay. I didn't know anything about The Shadow from Darkwing Duck, though.
Yeah.
Hadn't heard of it, didn't know of the 90s film, didn't... There was no element of it I was aware of. And then I sort of looked at the trailer, and I felt like there was a sense of, oh, Rich, you remember this from, like, video shops and stuff, and I'm like, no. No. So just no memories, no curiosity, and it might have been nice to fill in a few blanks in the sort of Flash Gordon era of comic books and radio plays, and, like, get it, you know, there was some curiosity in the fact that it was an early comic book character that influenced Batman heavily, which I'm a big fan of, the Man-Bat thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, nothing for me. File empty, and now it reads, oh dear, oh dear. Oh dear.
That's the thing, like, even if, like, in your case, you don't know who the Shadow is, you've still, like,
still don't
experienced
know, really.
The influence.
Yeah, of course. There's the millionaire vigilante.
Yeah, no, it's hidden it is identity. Literally Superman.
Yeah.
But the fact that this is the only really major adaptation of probably one of the most important early like templates for superheroes just makes it that much worse.
Yeah, yeah. I like the look of the Shadow. I like his large trilby. His nose less so.
Don't get it wrong. That hat's a fedora.
Well, sorry, dude.
People fucking misname these hats all the time.
I should know better because I've done a little bit of artwork about hats, and I did go to the effort of remembering the difference between trilbies and fedoras. But you're right; it's a big ass fedora.
Yeah.
But I like the cape, the guns, kind of a bit on the nose, but. It's a bit on the nose. But the Shadow has been eclipsed, pun intended, by the Batman. And then Batman shone his bat symbol on the moon to eclipse it. Obviously it's influential, sure. But let's take it as just this film, because we're not discussing the Shadow and his legacy, really. The film is a bit weird, because it opens with an Asian... gangster. God. It's like a crack den come mansion that...
Yeah, I think it's an opium den, and, for some reason, Alec Baldwin as Lamont Cranston, and I don't know anything about The Shadow beyond, basics, so I don't know if this is from the original stories, but I guess he's some kind of, crime lord in 1930s China with his long fingernails and his...
Through the film, I thought it was ancient Asian, because it looks like old fashioned, but I guess opium would be a bit more modern.
One point, he's shown as a fucking barbarian, and it seems like it's going to fill in his past and his, it suggests this, dark side to him.
Then a title card comes up after the first bit of exposition.
Yeah, and you're like, wait, why is he, what? Why...
Why, how is he Asian anyway? The two main characters are Asian, and they're white dudes.
No, he's not.
He's a white he's guy not, who lives in...
No, he went to China during, the war, which presumably is World War One, and then was gone for 7 years, became this, crime lord, I guess, and then a monk turned up and went, hey, you're a evil, you should be a hero. And that was it. That's the extent of his backstory. And then all through the film, it keeps talking about his dark side and how, he embodies and understands the evil of men. And it keeps suggesting that it's going to go further and give him some motivation. But then it just goes, no, I don't.
Yeah, so I didn't understand that it was ancient. I thought it was ancient China or whatever. So I was okay, so fair enough, he's not Asian, he's not meant to be. Obviously the Khan in it is supposed to be Asian, but he's a white dude.
No, he's a Asian-American actor.
Wait, why did they put weird makeup on him then?
To make him look like Genghis Khan.
To make him look more Asian, not Asian
I
enough.
Think actually that's what it was. He's Chinese, he was born in Hong Kong.
Oh, wait, why did they give him such stupid makeup?
Because it's the early 90s and he's an Asian character.
Well, okay. But the thing that hits you first of all with this film is, eventually. It's the first problem that hits you slowly. And it doesn't really explain stuff properly. It sort of tells you things, but you don't quite understand them. And I think that's really.
I'm not someone who... it's very rare that I feel I need exposition... I don't care if a film explains things to me, but it feels like the film is almost explaining things to me, but doesn't quite understand itself.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of go, it's because monks and there's a temple in the fog. What happened? Alec Baldwin's got a wig on.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's happening, but he's hairy and he's got that kind of 90s buff dad Pierce Brosnan kind of physique.
I think a lot of the problems in terms of what you're saying, in terms of not explaining itself, comes from it's taking its cues kind of from the Batman stuff that's coming out at the same time, the Tim Burton films and the animated series, which it's definitely stealing a lot of its visual style from. But the thing with Batman is he's much more
famous,
ingrained in culture. Yeah, so you don't. really need to know that much about his backstory. And this film kind of assumes the same with The Shadow. But
yeah, it assumes you know who he is.
Yeah, but it's really an obscure kind of radio play detective novel, a graphic novel back from in the day, and it makes too many assumptions of its audience that it knows what's going on, and we really don't.
It's as if it says, oh, you know, the Shadow used to be a barbarian with long fingernails and long hair, and he was cruel, and he'd kill people through his assistants when they took a hostage.
Yeah.
Shoot through him! Like it was so weird when the guy he was sort of going to kill took a hostage.
James Hong.
Yeah, also featuring like that guy who's in loads of 80s and 90s action movies as
the guy with the moustache and the long hair.
He should have been Genghis Khan's ancestor.
The one who eats the chocolate in Descendant. Die Hard.
Yeah, but they come in and anyway, there's a hostage situation. He says shoot through him, but they just because he like you can't you know you might accidentally kill our guy. It's like don't shoot through him. Shoot him. Maybe you won't hit the guy. That would be surely the logical thing was to just take the shot. But they're setting him up as a big horrible meanie, an unredeemable villain who cannot be a hero. And I thought he was in the past, so I thought he was like immortal as well as magic and could disappear.
No, it's recent, and I think like where I thought it was gonna go is that having to like kill people as a soldier in the First World War made him not want to go back to like society, and he disappeared into like and became this you know sort of criminal baron.
Because he is. And then, like you said, monks come along and go, "No, be a goodie. We'll train you. And here's a magic dagger you can't kill.
Fucking knife."
Why is there a dagger with a face?
Okay,
it's got teeth and it flies around, and you control it with your mind, but it resists you.
This is where I was gonna. I want to get it out of the way now because I feel like it'll come up again and again. This film supposedly was not planned, but like Sam Raimi tried to get the rights to direct this. Now, this was 1994. He'd already done Darkman, which was an original character created in the style of this kind of superhero. I don't love Darkman, but I like it, and
Abby,
I think...
You get it.
Abby, you have an affection for Darkman, don't you?
Yeah, no, it's a fun movie.
Abby?
Yeah, for something that's totally made up, it's very much in the tradition of superheroes, and I think there's something to be said for that.
And it definitely captures the, like... The feel of it, it does kind of what he did with Spider-Man and especially Spider-Man 2 much later on. Like, it captures that feeling of, like, a pulpy, colourful comic book. And he wanted to do The Shadow. And he couldn't get the rights. But this film has a lot of, like, Sam Raimi-type touches to it every now and then. So it's like, Sam Raimi couldn't get the rights. The studio, Universal... managed to, like, they said, right, we're going to make a film, we'll get the guy who directed Highlander to do it, because he's got a pretty, you know, unique style himself. However, we will tell him to go and watch Darkman and maybe Evil Dead 2 and then say, can you direct it like those films? Why not just get fucking Sam Raimi to do it then? Like, he must have been cheap in 94. I feel like this, because that fucking dagger is Bruce Campbell's disembodied hand. The flying monster books from Army of Darkness, like, and I like the whole time I was watching this, especially in those scenes where it gets much more like experimental and actiony, I was like, why wasn't this directed by Sam Raimi and starring an early 90s Bruce Campbell as Lamont Cranston doing his like full cheesy leading man thing that he's so good at?
Yeah, it was odd. At times it made me think of Big Trouble in Little China, which we won't get into an argument about. But
it's like, it has these moments of like cartoony Sam Raimi style, and then it just goes completely flat. Like it deflates and just becomes Alec Baldwin pouting in an ornate room.
It's an odd CGI effect as well, because it's shit. It kind of looks something like out of one of the Tomb Raider films or something as well.
It's like something from Mortal Kombat, which came out pretty much think it came out the same year. Mortal Kombat was 94 as well.
Yeah, but then, and it does all this shit anyway, and it slaps a little explanation of, and then he moved to like America again, and
yeah,
and he's now he's a good guy now. So we'll pick up where that got interesting. Why not? So yeah, Abby, what did you make of the sort of origin we got for the Shadow?
It was not enough. I know enough about superheroes to be able to join dots when it isn't done for you. Even with this, even I was struggling with this some of the time. I was like, okay, what I assumed you meant was this, but now you've done something to directly contradict that, so I now have no idea what's happening or what you're doing.
And all of the Shadow's powers are arbitrary, so nothing to do with who he was has anything to do with the fact that he can hide, like he's invisible. He controls people's minds, like kind of, he does Jedi mind tricks, and he mentally makes people not see him, apart from they can see his shadow, which is a weird little addition that the monks must have helped him with. What else does he have?
He can change the size of his nose.
if you put a scarf up over your face to hide your identity, and a fedora down, and a cape, okay, maybe that people can tell who you are from your eyes and nose, but why you're making yourself invisible? You don't need to make yourself have a big nose in between being invisible.
The thing is, though, why didn't the mask just come up over his nose?
Mm. Why have a mask? You can make yourself invisible.
Yeah. Why just not make himself into any other person or creature in the whole world?
Yeah.
I mean, presumably his nose is out because that's what he was designed like in the original comics. But then I want to go back to like the artists from the 30s and just be like, just put the fucking thing up over his nose. Like, what are you, like...
You can't tell who he is from his nose anyway. Like, I'm just saying, like, it doesn't make any sense to worry about it.
No, but at least it being over his nose and then the hat, it looks cool. It's
if
got
someone
that, like,
sees him, they don't know
bandit look. Yeah. Was this pre or post Lone Ranger?
I don't know, it must have been pretty similar time.
Yeah, it definitely is, but like, I don't know if this came after or before, because the Lone Ranger was another like Batman influence, and like, there were a lot of these like masked vigilantes in the 30s, but this was maybe the first one that had like supernatural powers.
It's proper silly, like it's really.
Oh, yeah,
you're not going to get away with it for very long. It's it's basically I am a magic man, and we don't know why he's magic or why the monks care. It's just. Because he's had a dark past, he can control dark powers, I think. And so he can make himself invisible. And what he chooses to do with this is to stop criminals, like a la, I guess it's like how Batman and most comics people do it. They turns up when people are in danger and fights them, and they can't see him, so he has the advantage. Unless they shine a torch at him to see his outline,
nah.
Or are in a well-lit room, or I guess
in a puddle.
Yeah. Was there anything else? So the Jedi mind trick again. He controls people's minds. Oh, but he has a whole anyone he saves, he indoctrinates. I don't know if he quite forces them to be his servants, which is what the bad guy does. Or he, because it's like the Godfather favour thing. I've saved you.
I mean,
where my magical opal ring that will communicate to you when I need your help. Either, I usually need you as a taxi driver, to be honest. Occasionally I'll need a scientist. Maybe he has someone who's got a ring who just does his admin and taxes. And then
he does have the guy at his, like, long... postal tube.
What the fuck? He has the most elaborate form of post ever, where someone delivers it to as an example of how the Shadow receives, I don't know, Santa's wish list, I don't know, gets messages. A band posts it in like an office, and it shoots down like a Terry Gilliam style fucking,
it's like fucking Simpsons joke.
Yeah. Although this might have been one of the first times that, like, that kind of visual style was done, where you kind of have the really quick close-up of inside something.
No,
which these days
did it in fucking in Evil Dead 2 in, like, 1987 or whatever it was. I'm pretty sure he did it in Darkman, too.
The The problem was it was 8 miles long.
Yes.
to what?
And it was in New York. Some fucker would have destroyed that minutes after it had gone up.
The pipe is really elaborate for laughs, I think. But also, if anyone takes a piece out, it's fucked. And yeah. How is that secret? It's a pipe everyone can see. You know that, what's that office down the corridor? It's the one with the pipe that goes outside and you can follow it to where it actually goes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. What's also, it for?
Wouldn't like city ordinance have some things to say about a pipe like that? Like, where did this go?
How do you know? Are these the people with a ring correspond to him with it or something?
Yeah, it's this weird like.
But he mind controls them anyway, so.
I don't think he does that to the people who like help him. They help him voluntarily, is the impression I got. Like, he saves them and he says, you know, now you owe me a favor, like the fucking mafia, and like,
yeah.
And he has.
Although he does, yeah, he does say like, you belong to me now, which is a little weird.
Yeah, I mean, I think
they have to wear a ring permanently. Like, the wives and stuff are going to see this ring and be like, why did you never take that off?
Although, to be fair, you know, if someone does save your life from like drowning in concrete boots, I think you'd probably be willing to help them out.
I mean, I think the idea also is that like, he's not necessarily meant to be a hero in terms of like goody two shoes. You know, he's supposed to be a sort of anti-hero, which is why he does order people around.
He's a rich white guy, after all, trying to control the laws.
And he's kind of similar to Batman. He part of his thing is like frightening criminals, which I did. There were little moments in this film where I could see there was a better film in there, and it was like, I liked the laugh that Alec Baldwin did when he was like the ghost. But I wish they'd played that up more. Like, I don't know. I kind of liked Alec Baldwin in this. He was better than I was expecting him to be, just because like he seemed to really enjoy playing a scumbag.
Although I'm guessing the bar was set quite low there.
Alec Baldwin had a little bit of a... He had a rough time in the 90s, and then he had a bit of a renaissance, went with, like, 30 Rock and, like, comedy acting and all that stuff. But, like, I wasn't expecting to have him be one of the three sort of bright spots in terms of performances. It was him, Ian McKellen, and Tim Curry.
This is a thing I want to bring up, actually, is... Me, Abby, and Anthony all watched it together in his house. And there was a sense of, but I liked Tim Curry and I liked Ian McKellen. And I...
Yeah, I think the casting of everyone, maybe Alec Baldwin slightly questionable, but everyone else, I think the casting was brilliant.
Like I said, I would have preferred Bruce Campbell to be playing Lamont Cranston in full-on cheesy Bruce Campbell mode.
Sure. This is the thing, though. I felt... It wasn't that they were, you know, say, well cast. The characters are boring. They're just two scientists.
Yes, I didn't say the characters. I said casting. The people that they got together to make the people as interesting as they could.
Yeah, but they don't do anything with them.
But say they're well cast is to have characters that are the right people to play the roles. There wasn't a role. It was just they were in it. And we like
them. Well, that's the thing. Who could possibly have come along and made it any better than any of these people? I mean, I think they all had the right style of acting that worked really good.
But they
didn't. Even if their characters were crap.
They didn't. Yes, but they as brilliant actors and charisma-filled men, they didn't make them into good three-dimensional characters. They just were in it as them.
Yes, but my point is, who else could have made them any better than the people that they chose?
We don't know, because no one else made them.
When Ian McKellen and Tim Curry can't make them any better, like, you do.
I will say, for Tim Curry's role, I don't know if he was given much direction, but I think he was entertaining as just a slime ball, gruesome. It made me realize how good Tim Curry is at, like, making himself grotesque with very little. Like, he didn't have any special makeup on. He just kind of, like, pulled his face in. Well, he's not, though. Like, there are other times where he's, like, a strikingly attractive man, and then other times where he, like, pulls his chin in and, like, opens his eyes really wide and goes, bah! And, like, turns himself into a weird toad man on purpose. Yeah, like, he's so... Yeah.
Sure.
He's really versatile in terms of, like, being a striking-looking, interesting-looking person and being a goblin. Like,
if Steve Buscemi and him could splice their DNA, I don't know what you'd get.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Abby, do you have any thoughts on the McKellen-Tim Curry thing? I think Jamie's defended Tim Curry. I'm still not sure McKellen...
Ian McKellen's wasted. He doesn't do anything.
Well, I was going to bring this up a bit later, but with this film, the set design and art department tried really hard. The actors tried really hard.
Mm.
But the stuff they were given was just not good enough.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm coming from. Like, I don't... Like, if you assembled a team and you told them, I need to recreate a kind of half film noir, half comic booky 1930s New York in 1994, I don't think they could have done any better than they did. Like, I think a lot, if not all, of the technical aspects of the film are really good. It's just, you know, when you don't have enough of a story to follow, that's where it falls down.
For me, part of the problem is the technical stuff, because, like Abby said, the set design and the costumes are pretty decent, but I feel like Russell Mulcahy wasn't interested in making this film, because, like... A lot of it is shot in such a way that you can't fucking see half of it. Not because of, like, a stylistic, like, you know, it's the shadow, it's supposed to be dark and stuff. He just couldn't be asked. Like, it's not... Like, Highlander, just as for comparison, is a really, like, frenetic...
Dynamic, like, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a like, part of why it works is it's not a great film, but it's very, like, it's very engaging because it's so energetic. Whereas this film has little moments of that, but then it has these long stretches of just... It's like Russell Mulcahy's just going, yeah, this happened, and then he went over there, and...
Oh, we need a shot of Khan lying on the floor that's a particular pattern, and he gets up and his clothes...
That was a really cool shot.
His clothes are the same.
That's a kind of microcosm of the whole film. It's like, wow, that looked really cool, but pointless. What was the point?
Yeah.
Well, it's another 20 minutes until the next interesting shot, I guess.
this is the thing. I'm not even willing... Like, the sets were okay. The costumes were quite good. But the matte paintings were shockingly obvious. Like, they were really...
When aren't they in any film, though?
Oh, mate, what are you on about? What films have you watched? There's loads of films with great map paintings that work perfectly. They just, this one, you're going, look at that bridge. The other end of the, like, the very first scene where they fight off, where the Shadow fights a bunch of gangsters on a bridge to save a guy from being dropped in the ocean with concrete shoes.
Well, it's I don't think I've ever seen a map painting in a film where I'm like, yes, I believe that isn't a matte painting. And yet it's fine, because it's really...
You're mad. Nice. You're mad if you think that's true. You must have
Jamie,
seen
defend
matte
me.
Paintings. Oh, you've never seen a film with good matte paintings. Are you kidding? You just don't realise.
No, but you can always tell it's a matte painting. Like, if you watch any of the three original Indiana Jones films, you can see every fucking matte painting, and that's part of why it looks cool.
It looked like you could see it was a set, like, not a set, it looked like a bloody play background, and it happened more than once, like, the skylines.
You know what, again, that's part of the problem with this film, is that the reason that sticks out so much, the reason it's so egregious, is because sometimes the film treats this like a serious story, and then other times it doesn't. And that's why the map paintings are like, well, this just looks silly now, because it doesn't do, like...
Well, it's a kid's film, fuck it.
Yeah, and, like, if it went more comic booky, those map paintings wouldn't have stood out so much, because they would gel with the rest of the film.
And instead, you've got bit of CGI in it as well. It's like,
oh, the CGI is horrendous.
The effects, like, in general are a bit jarring. I know there's bit. I know there's another bit that me and Anthony disagree on, and it's there's the scene where the Shadow has a nightmare, and he thinks his face is warping.
That was great. I love that.
And
he basically
pulls off.
I liked it too.
He smushes his face, and we pan round him, and we go around the back of a lamp so they can sort of do cuts where they could change the makeup and stuff. And I watched it again just before watching it. And it looks cool to have his hand in his face, but it is terrible. The transitions are obviously
it's very
choppy.
Clearly just a rubber Alec Baldwin mask. But, like,
you just like it in principle, then? That's what.
No,
I'm
it was just it. I again,
some clever filmmaking. Like,
no, it wasn't. It was shit filmmaking because they couldn't do it properly. It would look.
But also, because the scene before it and immediately after it, those scenes were both so dull, it was another moment of like, oh shit, something interesting is happening. And again, it was another moment of like, this is a Sam Raimi film, not directed by Sam Raimi. That should be Bruce Campbell, like, shoving his hand into his own face and doing his whole like, and then like pulling his own head off. Like, but it's not, because it's fucking... Also, the score is Jerry Goldsmith copying Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
What the fuck is this film with, like, not just hiring the people who were supposed to be making it?
I just all the way through, it had a low quality. I don't know, the moments you guys seem to pick out as, oh, this was a good gem within the mundane
stuff. Well, it's because it's something. Like, those scenes are as hacky and shitty as they might be, the scenes that don't stand out in this film are so fucking dull. I could not believe how short this film is, because I felt like I was watching it for an entire fucking afternoon. There were so many times when I just tuned out, and I tuned back in, and fuck all had happened, so it didn't matter. Yeah. Like, it was so fucking dull.
So we have like an early on scene that sets up some needless characters in a way. Basically, we got, is it Peter Boyle is the taxi driver man? He's his personal cabbie, who he has...
He's trying to.
Poor Peter Boyle.
Just, I know.
He's great, and he's just stands there with a flat cap on, going, am I needed in this scene? No, but I'm still here. But like, so he drives him around. I don't know why a supervillain in a cab seems so shit. But
I did not genuinely, like, it was stupid as fuck. The idea of him just having his own personal taxi, like, he's just driving around the streets. Like, I guess he has the power to like cloud people's minds or whatever. But it's so fucking obvious.
But he knows him. He's in on it, Peter Boyle. He's like...
No, I mean for other people. Like, the traffic around them.
But, like, they have a... They establish him as this millionaire rich guy with his ridiculously gauche mansion. Old-style mansion as well. In the middle of a city. And but they have him go to, I don't know, the Iceberg Lounge where Penguin... sets up shop. And
oh fuck, this is immediately where, and this is fairly early in the film, but I just kind of went, I actually left the room at this point. Whenever that, it's that establishing shot of the woman singing in the club, I was like, I'm gonna make a sandwich or something. Like, it's fucking, this is just gonna be a long dull scene of, look at all this period stuff that doesn't mean anything.
We have to interject with a female love interest who is characterized as being able to read his thoughts, and in terms of her personality, she has nice hair.
She has nothing. There is nothing to this woman.
Does she have a name?
Margot Lane. She's played by Penelope Ann Miller, who... I feel like I have seen her in stuff, but I don't know. But like in this,
technically, she's the daughter of Ian McKellen, the scientist, who is a bomb. Yeah,
that's her. That's all her character. She's the daughter of a plot point.
Abby, as our two-dimensional female on the podcast, how do you feel about the female role in this film?
Well, normally I'd complain, but nobody was fleshed out, that's true. In that way, she was treated equally.
Like, I get the. It's weird, right? The Shadow has the biggest depth of character, which is weird for a Shadow to be two-dimensional. But he's a bad backstory that we can't quite... Like, I like the idea of he's evil and he's changed his ways. That's fine. And even the Invisible Man thing kind of works as an idea. It's an idea. He's a superhero, right? But he doesn't really have any strong... Like, he has... the odd dream that means he has doubts, but it doesn't really go very far. And all of his battles he has are psychological in nature. Unless he's invisible, then he got really easy stunts for all the stuntmen just fall back and go oof and fall down. But like, he doesn't, he has psychological battles where he overcomes someone, either a magical dagger or the bad guy. So there's no real... There's not a lot of excitement to what he does and who he is, but he's the only one with a backstory. Everyone else is a scientist
Yeah.
A scientist, a woman, and is there like, is there, I don't, he's meeting a guy for lunch who he's late for. Oh, it's his uncle. He's what?
That's his uncle, who's also right. The police commissioner.
Yeah. Commissioner again, Gordon, weirdly.
That's it. That's his character. He's just his uncle.
The fat man who's annoyed. And then he sort of falls in love with this woman, sort of, and then also pisses off quite quickly. There's not really a lot. We don't really have them meet each other for any purpose other than...
She has so little agency that he, like, goes to date with her, reads her mind, or has her read his mind, abandons her for a bit, comes back, leaves again. Like, she's just sort of floating around going, oh, I hope I hear from him again.
Like, well, I can understand him running away. If he gets his mind read, he's worried because he's got secrets and a whole double life. And so he wants to get away. But then later when she saves him and she turns up at his house and he's like, you can leave now. And she doesn't leave. And then again later on, they're like, wait, now you should probably leave. Nah, I'll be on your couch when you come back. She does save him from drowning. Well, that's something, I guess. It's not really a character.
People do stuff and say things in this film that it feels like people's actions don't feel like they have any consequences. Like, things just sort of happen when the plot needs it to.
Well, I suppose the biggest thing that happens, and it's a good talking point, is the bad guy turns up in the big metal silver coffin of Genghis Khan.
The fact that the villain is literally delivered to the film because they had no other way of, like, bringing him in, it's just... Hey, this box arrived, the bad guy's in it. Like, what the fuck was he there for? Why? Oh, God.
I have a lot of issues with this, but does someone want to describe the museum delivery scene where...
No.
No?
Oh, it's got old man dad Alf. That's where he turns up as the assistant, the thing.
Took a break from raping tramps, whatever.
Hey, it was consensual as far as I am aware.
Yeah. Go on, what happened, Anthony? What happens in this Genghis Khan coffin malarkey?
Not much.
There's a guy gets killed.
Yeah, I suppose. Like, they get delivered this giant metal sarcophagus, which has got some with Latin on it for some reason, even though it's from Mongolia. And then it proceeds to have a laugh with the security guards. By pretending
again.
To open and not open for some
again,
reason.
Again, though, that's another fucking Sam Raimi joke.
Yeah.
Like, a little, like,
I'm coming around to this. I'm coming around to this, Jamie. You're right. Should have been directed by Sam Raimi.
Yeah, it's a pretend Sam Raimi film.
But, what we assume is Genghis Khan at the time just comes out of the sarcophagus, promptly shows that he can control people's minds. Kills the guard and escapes in New York.
He doesn't kill the museum guys either. He just kills the security guy and then hides amongst the museum pieces and fucks off. What bug B is, they obviously the base of young Genghis Khan relative man, Genghis Khan's descendant, something else Khan, he has a secret base that's an invisible, like a lot in New York that used to be a hotel that no one remembers being demolished because he's using his mental powers to hide it, so it just seems like a vacant lot that no one wants to buy.
Yeah, I think it's because of the original assumption that he is an ancient warrior from the past, because they don't really explain it at the time, even though he's, speaking English and knows what a gun is.
Yeah.
Which should be the first clue, but I think it's because, he keeps being dressed as an ancient Mongolian. Then you just assume he's an ancient guy, but he does, but he does explain that he's a descendant, and that it is, they throw in one line here and there to explain what's going on. And I suppose you're supposed to put the pieces together yourself.
You're supposed to pay attention, and it's borderline impossible.
That we are discovering is the problem. But no, he's a modern day man, and I assume he's just been, working on this plan for the last decade, and now it's all
dressed like that,
coming.
He has his plan
crazy.
Yeah, he's a maniac.
Psychic man.
Yeah, but at one point he just wears a suit, but like once. Yeah.
And he wears a silly Russian hat at one point, or Mongolian hat.
Oh yeah.
And he tells a sailor to jump off the Empire State's building
because I can never remember that actor's name, but he pops up in tons of stuff. He was in...
And then we have a cut... Sorry, I don't know who he is, but we have a cutaway, and his death is treated like a background thing. Like, some guy dying in the background.
Yeah, nobody cares. This guy careening down the side of the fucking Empire State Building, and then it just panned out to Alec Baldwin having a conversation.
he also, Genghis Khan guy, I don't know what his real supposed name is. But
it's Shuan Khan. Shuan. I'm just calling Khan.
Khan, he decides to kill a tax driver instead of paying as well, just by going, you want to fill up with gas? And by that I mean go kill yourself by driving into a petrol station.
I did that one where he gets the taxi driver to drive into the fuel truck. I was like, holy shit, that was so unnecessarily over the top. And I did like how happy the taxi driver was. Oh, it must be my lucky day.
Yeah, like, weird.
But again, he has this ability to get into someone's head and make them kill themselves. Why the fuck is he doing any of this elaborate shit if he's got that kind of like...
power. Mm. So there's a lot of problems with the Khan because he has this great power that's the same as the Shadow. Where I can control minds. He's not invisible for whatever reason, so he can mind wash people. But his plan is, I thought he was Genghis Khan reincarnate, and I thought they'd found an artifact from the past and unlocked him. That's very confusing, because they don't explain who he is. He just turns up in his magical base that we don't know where that is. He's just, one day he's in a room that's really, really lavish, but you don't know where that is, because they haven't got to that yet. So there's a lot of, we'll get to it, but for now, be confused. But he posts himself to a museum. Wants to absorb the energy of his ancestors in Genghis Khan's coffin. Then he's going to let...
Okay, wait, I have a question.
Yeah.
Does he eat Genghis Khan?
The corpse. I guess.
Because there's no corpse in there when he arrives. So how is he absorbing anything if he's not there?
I don't know. Why did Genghis Khan get buried in a massive silver coffin? I mean, he was lavish, but...
He probably didn't.
It's like a lavish Iron Maiden or something, isn't it? It's like a huge thing.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he did, or maybe he didn't. But he says, Genghis Khan, my ancestor, conquered half the world. I'm here to conquer the other half. That presumes Genghis Khan still has control of half of the world. If you conquer the other half, you still have another half. Because the Mongolians, I hate to tell you, in the 1930s, they weren't so hot. They weren't conquering the world in the 30s. That aside, he's this guy who posts himself to a museum, absorbs some powers, mind controls people, and then if he doesn't like them, he just kills them because they're shit or weak. If they're too weak, he doesn't bother. If they're just weak enough to control, they're his henchmen who he dresses up in ancient Mongolian warrior outfits, and instead of using guns, because it's the 30s, they have like crossbows and things like that, and swords. And so they go about... trying to find... I don't know why the posting himself had anything to do with anything.
I don't know.
He had to find a couple of scientists, Tim Curry and McKellen, and make them work together to make a special bomb that will blow up a chunk of the United States of America. As a kind of...
Would it? I thought it was just like the city that it was. Yeah. Because he says, McKellen's like, from there to there. But like...
It's in the newspaper that he's going to do it. Because he wants to take over the world, and he's going to do it by potentially blowing up
himself.
He's going to blow up a city, and then what? He wants all the jewels and loads of fineries. Like, he can't just walk into a jewelry store and mind control them to give him all the lavish things.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, with his like mind control abilities, can't he just go to world leaders and say it's mine now? Like,
especially as it's established that he has been able to hypnotize the whole of New York City into not seeing a giant building.
You're right, he doesn't even have to do it like face-to-face. He can do an entire city of people, so what the fuck is the point of his plot anyway?
Maybe he's just a big fan of Doctor Strange. He just likes the idea of like the illusion of a little...
Or he just likes a challenge, like he just wants to make it hard for himself.
He likes a convoluted plot and big, shiny... ticking clock bombs. And the thing is, we don't really get to what he's doing straight away. And like I say, you don't. I thought, A, the Shadow was from the past, and B, this guy was an ancient villain, or, like, I thought he might have been another barbarian who was against Alec Baldwin in the past, but then it wasn't the case.
Yeah, it's the only reason I could think of for all this weird convoluted plan is that he's just doing it to get the Shadow onto his side, maybe.
And because that's he admired him, because he was a bastard and shot people in his opium den.
They act as though Khan and Lamont Cranston have an established relationship.
In the past, yeah.
But we never see, like, the film doesn't care. It doesn't want to, like, it just sort of suggests it and then goes, yeah, but he's the bad guy. And he doesn't kill him, but,
I'm
like,
good now, though.
Defeats him.
Yeah, yeah. But not just, like, not just that they know each other from the past, but, like, that they're, somehow their spirits know each other from the ancient past, and perhaps they're, like, ancient spirits in different, reincarnated in different bodies, and, like, what is going on? And it's this, like, I think I could have accepted the small bit of backstory at the beginning as enough to go on, but then they throw this crap at you, and it's like, well, no.
Is that what that shot of Alec Baldwin dressed as a Mongolian barbarian was? Was it supposed to be like him, but like in ancient past, like in a different body or something?
I don't know. I think I would have enjoyed an explanation that involved ancient ancestors feuding or being friends, and like it would have been nice to tie it in properly instead of just having the bad guy. Oh, he has a Genghis Khan complex.
It is a little bit Highlander, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, again, that's what I thought they were going to go for with Khan. I thought they were going to do the whole Mario Van Peebles in...
Highlander 3 thing.
Yeah, although, was that before this? I know it wasn't directed by Russell Mulcahy anyway.
No, you make Abby angry if you talk about Highlander beyond the first one.
Well, just that idea of, like, the villain... Because obviously in the first Highlander, the Kurgan has, you know, he's modern as well. Like, he is aware of everything, but, like... Or maybe Michael Ironside in the second one, which was directed by Russell Mulcahy. Like, the idea of, like, a person out of a different place or time, like, not understanding the modern world and, like... Because it seemed like that, because he walks around dressed like a fucking Mongolian barbarian.
Unless he doesn't feel like it, then he dresses in a sharp suit.
And nobody even bats an eye at him. Like, nobody looks at him, but people are looking at him, acknowledging him, so it's not like he's making himself invisible.
Yeah.
Fuck it, there's, like, no consistency in any of this. Yeah.
Okay. And we have, like, sort of the Shadow's investigating things, and he goes down to Tim Curry's special circular spherical lab just to get trapped, and it gets filled with
water.
What
the fuck is that? Welcome to my tank. What?
Spherical, he talks about it when he's not hitting on the lady.
Oh, he wasn't fucking listening.
Like, he hits on McKellen's daughter for a bit in a lecherous way, and she's like,
"See, that
I
was
hate
funny.
You.
That was fun."
I guess. But he's what I liked about him, he's the only non-brainwashed guy helping Khan guy. Like, like the joke is, you were the first person who was up for my evil plan. Without me having to force them to be up for it. But, he gets trapped in a water tank, and he gets to use his... Oh, yeah, that chick could read my mind. Read my mind, I need your help. And then he still has to gesture through the window where he's drowning. To knock the door.
He has to literally bow to open the door and then demonstrate how to twist the fucking... What's it called? The round handle thing. It's like,
and he starts filling up. He's got loads of time, and then we cut to her, and she's quickly edited. So the tank's very full. She's pegging it down the road in a car, and it's like, how quickly did this tank fill up? And like, it's got bullet holes where the water's seeping out anyway, where he gets a bit of breath from.
Alec Baldwin just like poking his finger through that little hole. I don't know why that was funny. It was just fucking stupid.
But it's just a needless. You've saved me, and now you are irrelevant again.
Yeah.
And now we could, like, how do we? Because there's not really any memorable parts that happen, really.
Yeah. Also, why is there just a giant spherical tank that fills with water?
Experiments for bomb science. Because one of them makes bombs and the other one makes clocks. What do they do?
Science.
Ian McKellen makes
even Anthony
something to do with beryllium.
Ah, yeah.
Beryllium. Oh, they kept saying beryllium.
And Khan has that like coin that's made of like magic god gold or some fucking nonsense.
Why does he even use that? He could mind control people. He doesn't need to pretend pay.
Why does he give it to Alec Baldwin and then go, "Hey, here's a clue for my entire plan. Anyway, bye." Like, yeah. What? Fuck hell.
But like, we have all these people who are being brainwashed to do the bidding of this baddie. And slowly the Shadow gets to the point where he confronts him. And all the thing, I mean, he does have a few scenes where he fights off dudes with crossbows and he gets pinned like his shadow. The guy goes torch, your one weakness, light. And then they manage to crossbow his corner, like his cape to the wall.
Yeah.
And they have I quite like the effect where he steps out of his shadow and becomes visible. Like, I don't know if again, it makes sense, but I like the look of it.
Again, it's another moment of like Mulcahy or the writers or someone like suddenly had an idea and everybody got really excited because for the rest of the shoot everyone was bored as fuck. And, like, they throw everything into this one like minute long scene and then it all goes back to the Shadow again and you're like, why does the rest of the film like this?
They crossbow him as well and then they have him pinned and they don't crossbow him in the face.
Yeah.
Or chopping up or shoot him or anything. He shoots them with his guns. And they fly across the room and smash into things.
Yeah.
Or that bit where he tackles a guy out a window and then they land on like a gargoyle eagle and he says next to him, "You're on top."
It's really Khan. Weird. He's fighting Khan and like that's the other thing. There's that. No, and
he doesn't fight Khan. He fights one of his henchmen, doesn't he? Like, he doesn't say to Khan, "Next time you're on top," does he?
I'm pretty sure that was Khan.
No. It's a henchman because that henchman was dead. The film would have been over.
Oh, I don't know. I was barely.
They all look similar.
Looking at the TV at this point, like a fucking.
What's the Abby? Do you remember the key moments where the Shadow gets to grips with the baddie? Because all I remember is he has psychological battles where either a floating knife runs around, or glass smashes and mirrors break. Do you actually
forget the floor that moves?
Oh, and the floor that moves like in Flash Gordon or whatever.
Why?
Tippy surface. Barbie, do you remember any of the specifics here?
No, you've described it perfectly. There's a weird bit where that happens. There's no reasoning for any of it. Also, when he bought this hotel that he wasn't present in, he knew to give very specific instructions that he wanted one of the floors doctored so that it would pivot up and down.
For no reason at all.
Yeah, I guess it's... fair enough, no one can remember because they're being brainwashed, but...
Don't forget, he also changes his sarcophagus into a secret chute, into a laundry...
Laundry room! Yeah.
A laundry room and with an adjacent chandelier and chair storage area. I like that they're in the bottom of a hotel with a practical room full of extra material.
I mean,
but...
you have to think about it, but at the same time, it's like... It's like he stumbled across his like the supervillain's toilet. Like, oh yeah, here's a normal everyday thing he has to use. Oh, there's his microwave. Like,
yeah, you're gonna post yourself in a coffin, elaborate coffin, and then you have it back at your house anyway as a cover for the laundry. It's Genghis Khan, your famous barbarian ancestor who did. You know, he was a murderous bastard, but he helped the Mongolian people out a lot by uniting them under him, and he was up for people having their own religions. He was a bastard, but everyone were bastards in those times, and so you're painting this villain, and then he's a sacred ancient barbarian hero to you, but you just chuck your dirty sheets in his coffin when you're done.
Yeah,
with when you've had a few too many nights in bed, you chuck them down in the coffin. So yeah, the floor moves. The Shadow fights him, but not physically, because that would be interesting and exciting. Basically, the reveal is, oh, do you know those monks that taught you how to use these magical powers? They may have taught me something, but then I used their special magic knife that comes alive, and I killed them. He actually puts it weirder. He's like, oh, I took it from the monks. And by took it, I mean I put it took it from his body when I'd stabbed him with it. But they have a mind battle with the dagger, and eventually like, the shadow just stabs him with it mentally. And then he also...
And then we have mirrors.
All the powers start, like, people start seeing the building that's kind of a mystery. Oh, the empty lot is now a massive hotel.
Well, it's
and
Alec
everyone
Baldwin...
Everyone forgets who they are, forgets... everyone stops being controlled.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin resists the dark side and doesn't become a Sith, and then gets control of the knife, and then...
He smashes mirror... He's in a mirror maze, because...
Yeah, what the fuck is the mirror... Where did that come from?
I want a floor that
apparently, I read up, it's actually a reference to one of the shadow stories. But
okay, but
I don't
just
think
shove
any...
it in there.
Yeah, like... I don't think you can also watch it without thinking of they're just ripping off Into the Dragon.
Oh, yeah. Well, like you said, like it's an excuse for Russell Mulcahy to blow up a shitload of glass because he fucking loved it.
Also, there's another scene of it that's an excuse where the woman who has no character is sent... She's mind-controlled to go and kill the shadow, and she tries and accidentally shoots his reflection in the mirror, and then she gets snapped out of it or something. And then it's just revealed, oh, you're the shadow because... I was sent to kill you, but I didn't know you were the shadow, and now I'm just in your apartment, and I think I'll stay here and be your girlfriend. So, just more excuse for glass breaking.
That's reminded me of something that I did want to talk about, the smoking billboard. With the big round mouth, was like talking to people, and its face turning into Khan. I was like, oh my god, it's one of those moments that, like, I'm embarrassed to be seen watching it. And it was a parody of, like, a real
billboard.
Sign.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't... Like, why did you do it to look like that?
I don't know. They also had CGI fire faces come... Like, the fire at his mansion would come out and project a big face at him.
I'm pretty sure the CGI in Terminator 2... a couple of years before this was better than the CGI in this.
It's not that I care that it's bad. It's that, what the fuck is happening and why?
Someone's coming. That was his, like, you know when you can track a parcel and it tells you that it's, like, the nearest, like, depot before it gets delivered to your house? Yeah. That's what the flaming face was. That was him knowing, that was his, like, notification on his phone that Khan's box had turned up at the fucking museum.
There's a lot of scenes where just a small explanation would go a long way.
Yeah.
A major factor is, oh, you guys know, this is all the stuff from The Shadow. It's like, no, I don't know. What's happening? Let me know and I might get involved in caring. So, you know, the upshot is The Shadow eventually... decides to get his shit together, doesn't go all evil, even though he's not really ever been tempted. He's just worried about it, if anything. And he's not evil,
he's just a dickhead.
Yeah, well, this doesn't really stop being a dickhead, mind-controlling people. He's unforgivable, really. He was he's at least a murderer.
The CGI fire actually reminds me, there's that dream where Margot Lane finds... long-haired, long-fingernail, topless Alec Baldwin.
Oh, he's so hairy and so unsettling.
He is very hairy. And he gets up and he goes, you shouldn't be here. And then, like, and I'm like, are you talking to me sitting here watching this film? Because I agree. Like, I will say, I wish Alec Baldwin had just continued to play Lamont Cranston like that. I like him when he's, like, long-fingernailed, gross, evil Lamont Cranston, because he really fucking hams it up as that, and as the shadow. When he's, like, normal rich man Lamont Cranston, that's when he's really... I guess that's the point, but, like...
I would have took a kind of 60s Batman-style The Shadow as well. That could have been fun. And
Alec Baldwin in this does remind me of, like, George Clooney in Batman and Robin. Like, it's almost to that level of, like, committing to full cheesiness.
What, like, shadow card and shadow nipples and stuff?
Yeah. Shadow nipples.
I want
great...
it. I want to give props to the moment of his performance. There were two moments I really liked, but the all-star was when he just described his dream exactly as it was to her.
I was waiting to bring this up. Like, it's a really odd moment in the film, and yet on its own, it's kind of brilliant. It went 20 years into the future and plucked a scene out of 30 Rock and kind of put it in this film.
That's the thing with this film, is it does also have moments of, like, self-referential humour that are funny, but they stick out because so much of the film is so boring. Like, there's one where they make a joke about their ties, where'd you get your tie and all that stuff, and that's funny in itself, but it's also a reference to product placement in the old radio show. That's quite clever. Did you exhaust your entire creativity on that one joke?
Just do a joke where the villain likes his tie, so buys one.
And Alec Baldwin, he is funny. Like, he's a better comedy actor than he is, like, serious leading man. And they give him, like, three moments to be funny in this.
Abby, did you have another thing that you wanted to mention?
When he was meeting Khan in that restaurant, and it was just the way that they spoke to each other was like, you sent somebody to kill me. Oh, yeah. I didn't send anyone to kill. I sent someone to be killed. And I just kept thinking any minute now, he's going to say, you fucking bitch.
It's also like, so I sent your sort of girlfriend to try and kill you so you'd murder her. Okay.
Yeah.
He's very convoluted when it comes to doing stuff.
That's very unnecessary. Although that scene did have, again, another moment of like self-referential humour where I was like, why isn't the rest of the film like this? Where they shoot each other's bullets.
What the fuck?
Like, yeah. I know. And as it is, when that actually happens, I'm like, fuck, that's really stupid. But then there's immediately a shot of both of them looking like they're thinking the same thing I am. Yeah. Like, they look like each other and each other's guns, like, how the fuck did we do that? And then it just carries on. I think, where's this humour for the rest of this dreck of a film?
Yeah, I hate to say it, but it should have been more like Big Trouble in Little China, which I don't like, but if it had been deliberately silly, sure, but it sort of walks a weird line between trying to tell a sci-fi comic book thing and being a noirish story, and also, it's a bit weird, isn't it? And magic and shit. It's for kids, who cares about logic, reason, motivation, character building? It's fucking the guy with a cape and a gun.
There's three films in here, all pulling in different directions.
I don't know what's going on. Like, that was the main thing. I don't know what was happening. And at the end, I had to ask a lot of questions to figure out who people were and what the why.
If we get into the end, we haven't talked about Tim Curry's character's death.
Well, he gets a weird moment, doesn't he? Where the bad guy goes, right, go defend me because I can't be asked to do it myself.
Yeah.
So you go with my henchman, and here's a big gun. Go and fight him off for me.
There's that whole sequence of Tim Curry facing off with the Shadow, and then the Shadow, like, drives him insane and makes him dribble, and then he jumps out a window and hits a table, and the Shadow laughs. And that's it.
He tells him to jump back and exit, and he tells him to jump through a window and hurts himself. Possibly dies. Like,
That whole sequence is, again, it's a fucking Sam Raimi movie. There's all these like close-up Dutch angles on like Tim Curry's face, making really like dribbly exaggerated expressions. He's really sweaty and gross, and I'm like, again, this is a Sam Raimi movie. This is one of those sequences where he does all those quick cuts like really close together.
We also have a scene with the other scientist. McKellen is rescued as he's sort of unbrainwashed.
But
we establish in one scene he gets red and green mixed up for no reason, and they have a big bomb that they've built and it rolls around the corridors really sillily.
it's the fucking beach ball from Darkstar.
And then they were in an elevator shaft and there was just this big ball being a problem and they have to stop it blowing up. just to have the scene where he cuts the wire and he goes, oh, green, no red, oh shit, and like the girl cuts the right wire because he says the wrong colour.
He cuts the right one, but he calls it the wrong colour and freaks her out.
But the thing is, whatever the right colour is, it's how he sees it. So,
yeah,
if he gets them mixed up, you want to cut the one that he mixes up. So if he sees green as red, he should still cut the wrong one, because it's like, you should go with one.
He says it's always green, and then he cuts the red wire, and as he's cutting the red wire, she's like, no, that one, that's the green one, but he was right, because he meant red. It's hilarious. It's a fucking knee slapper.
And why did they feel there was needed to have, like, oh, a big ball rolls around and can explode if it... I guess if it hits stuff, it's fine, but if it...
Because there has to be some tension somewhere. I mean, there wasn't, but it was an attempt.
Has a ticking bomb ever exploded in a film?
Like, yeah.
They're just there cutting the wire, and they don't, and they die. Has that ever happened?
Yes. Yes. Die Hard with a Vengeance. That guy in the school, and he cuts the thing, and the timer goes faster, and he's like, oh, and then it blows him up.
He's a bad guy, though, right?
No, he's a good guy. He's one of the bomb squad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in the school, yeah.
Event Horizon. What's his name? Is it Sean Pertwee? When he finds the bomb on the ship and it's got like 2 seconds left right as he finds it.
Nice. I'm glad people have bothered to not do the trope.
Yeah. Again, though, like 4 films, I think. Yeah. Like...
But, you know, the Shadow eventually is the winner and saves the day, kisses the girl.
Speaking of Big Trouble in Little China, he kind of defeats Khan in the same way Jack Burton does with the villain in Big Trouble in Little China, but less funny.
He has a lobotomy or whatever it was.
He uses his psychic powers and he hits him in the forehead with a shard of glass. It's not the spur of the moment, like throwing the knife back comedy death. He survives and has some kind of like partial lobotomy that removes the psychic part of his brain, which the doctor acknowledges as a thing exists, and then goes, "Well, bye." What?
It was a funny gag and reveal, because they show the side of his head that hasn't been shaved to do the surgery, and he's acting like if he's got these powers and he's in the insane asylum, he can get out. But he's had brain surgery and he can't anymore. That's kind of funny.
It's fine. Like, it was more, like, I assumed he would just be dead, so when they revealed that he was there, and then he's there saying, I'm a descendant of Genghis Khan, and they've got people saying, I'm Napoleon, and I'm, you know, whatever. Yeah, alright, well, whatever. Fucking...
Better than Arkham, at least he'll be there permanently.
He
has no powers anymore.
It's not constant escapes like it is with fucking Arkham Asylum.
Well, his power's gone, so he can't do anything.
And I mean, I guess at least they did something interesting there. But then the ending's just like, they're walking away and she's like, hey, you're the Shadow. And he goes, yeah. And that's the end of the film. Like, there's no... What's the point? What happened? Like, why did any of this matter?
Yeah, so Jamie, got a lot to answer for, I guess, and don't feel like you've done a very good job of explaining why we just had to discuss this.
Well,
I think Anthony enjoyed a bit, didn't you, Anthony? You enjoy it?
I degree more than you guys, I think.
A
not
degree
much,
more than
but
it was
a
awful.
Degree.
It also did that extremely 90s thing of being a superhero movie that then ends with a like pop, like
that song.
You know, but the thing is, like, for something like. Yeah, you've got, like, Batman Forever a year later ends with a U2 and a Seal song over the credits, and I think Batman and Robin had the Smashing Pumpkins, but, like, those at least make some degree of sense, because the Batman films aren't necessarily set in a specific era. They're kind of, like, whenever. But no, if you've got a superhero film set in the 30s, why would you put a 90s-sounding pop... I guess they do try and make the intro sound... period appropriate, and then the guitars kick in because it's 94, and I just turned it off. I just went fuck off at that point.
Who gives a fuck is what they thought. Whatever, just that's the film over then. Some people are trying, but for the most part it's not like they've got a great film to be getting on with, is it? So,
but they could have. It's a perfectly fine source material. It's in the period when Batman is a big thing. I did find it interesting that, like, a lot of the setup of the plot at the start of the film is, like, a really shit half-assed version of what would come Batman Begins.
It had that vibe, didn't it?
Him training with monks and like being a criminal and then being trained by monks for a number of years and then
all I can say about the Shadow is thanks for influencing Batman. I've had a lot of enjoyment from Batman. Thanks.
Although it itself was influenced too heavily by Batman.
The film, yeah.
I feel like if it just took one more step away from just trying to be in a Batman film,
the thing is,
it could have been a lot better.
Yeah.
Really weird combination of Tim Burton's Batman films, Darkman, and a bit of Dick Tracy thrown in.
Yeah.
Like, it's a mashup of all the worst parts of those films.
Yeah. And the Shadow's powers are shit. Like the magic's nonsense is too much. It's too nonsense. It's just the ramifications of the powers that the bad guys and good guys have are so over the top. It's too elaborate. You could do so many things, and they do
it's just
bullshit comic book fighting
everything,
and garbage.
Everything about the film is just half-assed. Like, nobody really cared what they were, apart from like a couple of members of the cast. Nobody really gave a shit. And the fact that, you know, this was made, it feels like it was made out of obligation when you had Sam Raimi specifically trying to get the right to make it.
You've certainly got your theory over that this was a bad Sam Raimi film that should have been made by him.
Yes, directed by Sam Raimi, written by him and the other guys who would write all of their movies together. Music by Danny Elfman, with Bruce Campbell as Lamont Cranston. Take it in that like comic book humorous direction that like Darkman went in. Cast the original. Originally, they wanted Chow Yun-Fat for Khan. Hmm. It could have been so much better. Keep Peter Boyle as a taxi driver, and keep Ian McKellen and Tim Curry.
Yeah.
Instead, we just got this fucking mess.
Yeah.
And I don't know why Russell Mulcahy has had such a shit career. Like, Highlander's not a brilliant film, but it's definitely a cult classic.
Who knows?
It was written really well.
Oh.
Which also, he had nothing to do with.
Yeah. I found out that Russell Mulcahy's directorial debut was the music video for Video Killed the Radio Star.
By Buggles.
Yep.
That was the first ever thing played on music television.
And Russell Mulcahy directed it, and then he went on to do Highlander, and then after that, it was just
It's not a brilliant music video either. It's a bit weird.
No, but
it's fine.
I mean, it was 1979. Like, music videos weren't
a thing.
Quite what they became.
Yeah. Okay.
He's
so
done a shit of music videos.
So metaphors and any other things you want to say, Abby? You got a metaphor? You've had plenty of time to.
I do.
Go on.
There's a toy company that will make a toy as what's the word I'm looking for? It's
like from a drawing.
You know, kids' drawings, they will try and reproduce that as close as they can with an actual toy.
They look quite good as well, don't they? Like, they look like the kid's drawing while simultaneously being a pleasant plushie.
And that's what this film is, because there's a lot of people that tried hard to do something high quality, but the original source was just terrible.
I disagree with that.
I mean, like, the scripting was poor, is what I mean.
The actual, like, practical source there and then.
Not the radio plays.
Not the Shadow,
No, I mean, the concept of the plot that they had and then script that came after it was just awful. And you can't come back from that.
Genghis Khan's grandkid posts himself to a museum, mind controls people, then can't quite beat the Shadow with a magic dagger because glass breaks. Like, that's not good enough to make a plushie out of, is it?
No.
That's fair. Anthony, do you have anything you want to add?
I think there's stuff in here to like. It's sporadic.
No.
And it... I personally didn't come out of at the end feeling like I wasted my time. When Rich started asking questions and I started thinking about it, I was like, yes, that didn't make any sense, but it looked okay. What can I say? I don't know how this works, but my metaphor is the film is Batman's Shadow.
Ooh.
So it
it's trying to be Batman, but all it can really be is just a dark outline of it.
I see.
It's like a shame as well.
But Batman's shadow as an iconic symbol is kind of cool.
The shadow has been overshadowed by Batman. So, yes, it's always going to be attached to Batman, but Batman, even though it came after and was influenced by the Shadow, will always it'll always outclass and be more of a reference point.
Oh, I remembered something.
Yes.
I wanted to cut it a little bit of slack, because it sounds like it has a little bit of the same problem that John Carter of Mars did, where it came too late.
Mm.
So it wasn't original anymore, even though it did stuff first.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
I will give them
a little bit of slack.
With John Carter of Mars and like Flash Gordon and I guess The Shadow, is these are comic books that appeared in newspapers, or, you know, obviously this was from like a radio story thing that was trying to sell comic books, and then it got adapted into its own thing. And so these are like early comic stories. They're childish and don't make a lot of sense, because they're like, they didn't treat them like adults you were going to entertain. They just made a little story they could like that was action packed and exciting and magical and fun. So they don't develop later on, because
Batman
he still dresses up like a bat and is mental, but you can interpret it in a way that makes
thing is enough there sense. Is however simple it was, or however different it was when it was adapted, there's enough, when it was first created, there's enough there that you could, with the right kind of effort and the right kind of affection for it, still make it relevant. Like, again, coming back to Sam Raimi constantly, but like, look what he did with the first two Spider-Man films. Like, he took something that was, he took a very old-fashioned look at Spider-Man. Like, he didn't do what Bryan Singer did with X-Men. You know, he tried to take that like golden era and adapt that.
He almost
essence.
Did. He did what they did to Superman in the 70s. He went, "Oh, that's a really competently made film version of a comic book hero.
Classic version of a hero." You know, rather than, you know, he wasn't doing like Ultimate Spider-Man or whatever the modern version was. And like, but
amazing.
And that could have potentially happened with The Shadow, because, you know, again, he, or there may have been other directors or whatever who had like that affection for it. Russell Mulcahy's an Australian who directs music videos. Like, I get the feeling he doesn't give a shit about The Shadow.
He didn't succeed making it good.
Yeah.
My metaphor is, it's like if someone goes, "Rich, I got two tickets to the world's greatest shadow puppetry guy ever. Do you want to come?" I'd be like, "So the guy can make really cool shadow puppets. What's he do? Well, he uses his hands to make shadow puppets that look cool things." "Nah, I don't think I'll come." Like, how good could it be? Like, I bet there are some really great shadow puppetry theatre productions. But
yeah, but you wouldn't watch them, and neither I.
And if you do watch them, you go, "Oh, well, came an hour, didn't it?"
Okay, well, that's a skill you have.
What's the plot? What's the thing? No, they just make shapes. Look, it's an elephant, it's a bunny, it's a 1950s Studebaker. Like, oh my god, it's just like, you know, I don't know, I just feel like it was underwhelming. It fell just below mediocre. Like, I wouldn't cut it the slack to say it was just sort of banal and...
Yeah, no, it's subpar. Like, it's not...
I was really fucked off with how it tried to make sense. So... I can't forgive a lot. It just was shit. It was someone who says, "Come to see the shadow puppetry." And I'm like, "Oh, I wish I'd gone to see Puppetry of the Penis. They're actually entertaining and a thing." That's the thing. There's a comedy duo act who use their penises as puppets to make shapes. And they are actually an Edinburgh hit in the festival. So I'd sooner go see men manipulate their penises than watch this again, is what I'm saying.
I mean, you have the internet. You don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, feel free to look up Puppetry of the Penis. Genuinely an act, genuinely quite talented. You've never seen a man make the shape of a burger with his dick and his balls before? Or the Eiffel Tower? Tremendous. It's my hot tip. Edinburgh, 1999. Hot tip. They've been around a while. Anyway, The Shadow. We discussed it. We moaned. We whinged. We critiqued. Now let's kiss and play the 90s music.
You didn't ask me about metaphor or final thoughts.
I thought your Sam Raimi bullshit was the metaphor.
Well, kind of, yeah.
No, what's your metaphor, Jimmy? Sorry.
Well, I also want to say, like, this is on Amazon, so I paid fucking $3 to watch this shit in standard definition.
I risked malware to watch this.
No, that's fucking $3 I'll never get back. But also, what felt like several hours that I'll never get back. I feel like I've used this metaphor before.
Is it cheesecake?
No. Okay. Although I don't like cheesecake. But
it's quite nice.
Oh, no, it's too sweet and, like, tangy. It's weird. It's like the... Do you remember when you were a kid and, like, especially for some reason, Power Rangers, when they were, like, a big deal, you would find knockoff Power Rangers action figures.
In the post office and stuff.
Yes, the post office action figures. And, like, they'd be called, like, Action Rangers or something. And, like, they'd have those weird hollow plastic heads that come off. Like...
Yeah,
it's just that in, like, along with all the, like, actual, like, Batman action figures, but there's an extra layer of sadness to it because this came first.
He's got a really ugly nose and he's a bit melted.
Oh god, I feel like we didn't talk about his nose enough, but, like,
it was shit and it looked ridiculous.
Why did they give him a prosthetic nose? That's my metaphor. This film is that fucking prosthetic nose. What the fuck is the point?
Just baffling. Yeah, that's good. There we go. Next time, another film, another ramble, another chat. So, catch us on the flip side, dudes. Cowabunga. Too sweet.
We're all off to watch Max Wright's gay homeless man crack orgy.
Right click, download to computer.
Do you know what? You're better off just watching several episodes of Alf. Fuck it.
God. Right. Bye.
Toodaloo.